Accession number 9168, reel number 27.
Mr. Amat, reel 27.
Whilst I was, we were under canvas in, well, the men were in army bell tents and the girls were in, well, more or less like the officer type tents used to be, what's called ridge tents, where we had, as I say, these Dornies used to come across and shoot these bombs toward London, and we used to have to go into action and stop them. I remember, well, this could have been, it must have been the summer, yes, that's right. Anyway, one or two of these doodle bugs got through, and they used to only fly at about 300 or 400 feet above the ground, so they passed over very quickly overhead. I remember at one point I was patrolling round, used to have to do patrols every now and again over night time with another chap, and as a sort of security prevention, and doodle bug came over to sit in the distance, and because the tail end used to, sparks used to fly out just like a firework rocket, and heard the noise of the engine thumping away, and it comes straight towards our camp. And me and this chap dived behind a stone building, I don't know what it was, some sort of a shed near the beach, as it came whooshed right over red, and it burst within a few seconds of passing over where we were, and right over the camp where the ATS girls were. And anyway, we reconnoitred and found out that nobody was hit, and that what had happened, it had burst, and as it was in a open space, there was no damage done at all. Nearly all the bits that was caused by the explosion flew out, the shrapnel and all that, hit these loose tents that were and slid to the ground. There was no harm done. Had that occurred in a built-up area and been in the middle of a street with all the rigid buildings and all that, of course, that would have caused the damage. So nobody, the girls were very shocked, and well, everybody was really at the time. But anyway, that's the only incident I remember. We were there, I forget now whether this was before we went to Weymouth. I think it must have been after we went back from, no, it wasn't. It was before we went to Weymouth. And then we went to, that's right, we went to Weymouth after that, and manned a gun site on a hill just near a place which is now a seaside resort. Get the name of it now. It was a shally camp built before the war where people used to go on holiday and occupy these shallies. And there was a couple of large buildings. One was acted as a dining room, the other one a sort of social centre, ballroom place. This the whole camp was lit by their own generators, which were powered by what used to be called Gardner engines. They were petrol driven engines, and this turned the dynamos and that fed the electricity into the camp. And I remember the guns were sighted on top of the hill, and we used to go back down the hill towards the dining room for our meals. And on the way down, somebody realised that this was the time of the year when mushrooms used to be about. And this, I've never seen so many mushrooms in all my life. I used to go down there nearly every day and pick a handful of mushrooms, take them down and cook them with our bacon or whatever we had. And it was quite an addition to our diet. Another thing about the camp was the fact that there was a pathway which led down to a secluded beach which had been used before the war by the holidaymakers and all that. And we used to go down there and sit in the sun, and quite enjoyable really at the time. But we didn't stop at Weymouth very long. We got sent back again to another site. I forget now the place we went to. But it was similar to the one where we were at Weymouth, at Yarmouth, near the coast. And here we lost our OC. He was poached away to Germany because at that time the Allies had landed on the invasion beaches and driven the Germans back towards Germany. And it was realised the end of the war was more or less in sight. Arrangements had to be made to take over a lot of the jobs to administer the newly occupied territory, and majors and captains were asked to volunteer to take over what's called in the old days of the First World War town major's jobs, which is more or less like the mayor of a town to administer the civilian population. So he was poached away to do that job, and we were left with a second in command who were, I remember he's a Welshman, but he and I never agreed, but it didn't worry me a lot because I never had very much left to do with him at all. But I know whilst I was there, to supplement the diet, I realised that in that part of the country where the ground was very sandy and there's quite a lot of area that was used by the upper crust aristocracy for shooting, and it was bounded in rabbits, so I used to get one of the local people I'd met in one of the pubs to lend me some of his snares, and I'd go out and set snares near rabbit holes to catch these rabbits. I think I caught a couple, and that's about all. And we took them back and skinned them and had them cooked. And after this, the whole units were being reorganised. And a lot of what we used to have as units were all broken up. And a complete new conception of administration was come into pass. Anyway, I was with several others was posted to another unit through a transit camp near where we were, and back to eventually I arrived at Sheffield, and I was employed at this unit, which was a mixed battery unit stationed outside Sheffield. It was guarding the city, and we never had any action there as far as I can remember. The only thing is it was very hilly, I remember that, and the only part about it was the fact that I had to stop there, and what I'd done there was I manned the twin Lewis guns on the gun sight, which was protecting the gun sight against the enemy low-flying aircraft. But whilst I was there, I was really more or less same as a lot of the other people, only three bodies that were surplus to the establishment, whatever it was. And we were, at the time, as I say, the doodlebugs came over in the south of England on the east coast, and it was realised that as the potential danger was coming across the channel from the doodlebugs, that the south coast was to be reinforced, and nearly all the guns which protected the cities in north and Scotland and all round the coast were all moved quickly down to the south coast. And there was, there must have been hundreds of these batteries along the whole of the south coast. And that they were static guns, they had to be sighted on a firm platform. So the engineers contrived a plan of what they call mattresses. And this was, they got all the sleepers they could get hold of from the railway yards and made a cruciform, which is a double cross, and bolted them together and put large iron U-bolts in them to hold them all together, and these were fixed up at one of the big camps outside Sheffield, and I was poached to this camp to help in construction of these things. That's how I know about it. And these were then transported quickly by road and rail to the south coast, and the guns were all mounted on these mattresses. So that there was a vast army of anti-aircraft guns of all calibres on the south coast firing at these doodlebugs as they came over. Yeah, after my sojourn at this camp making these mattresses, I was posted to another unit on the east coast again. And this must have been the end of 1944, because somewhere about November, I suppose, we got on the lorry, and there was about a dozen of us all told, odd people like me. And we arrived at this point, and there was a howling gale blowing at the time, and the driver, after we got out of the lorry with our kit, we stood on the ground, and we could hear the waves a few yards away breaking on the beach and the howling gale blowing, and the driver got in his lorry and drove away and left us there, and we didn't know where we were, nobody in sight, and we were stranded anyway. We started shouting out, and eventually somebody loomed up in the darkness and with a torch, and he happened to be a sergeant, and he was supposed to have been there to meet us, but anyway, he took us back through the lines and showed us where we got to stop. I remember the hut I got into was, as I say, there was a storm, a rain blowing, and it was a gale blowing, and I got in this hut, and when I looked round, I had no torch, but I struck matches, and I found that half the hut was puddles of water. There was one or two sheets of corrugated missing from the roof, where the gale had torn them off, and also there was every now and again there was a flash and a bang, and what had happened is that the gale had tore one of the electric cables away from its mounting, and this would keep hitting on the metal roof of the hut and causing it a short circuit. Anyway, I eventually found a place where I could have a few hours rest, although I don't think I remember sleeping much, with this flashing and banging going on all night and the rain pouring down. Eventually, I got through the night, and next morning went up in front of the OC and was told what we were supposed to do and all that sort of thing. And I was told by the sergeant major that I've got to report to the storm and in the quartermaster stores. And when I got there, there was a young man who'd been a storm with the people there some time before, and I shifted my kit into the stores with him, and we stopped there for some time. He was quite a nice young man, and one thing about him was he was a musician, and he used to play the violin, and I'm not no musician, I didn't think about music, but he told me quite a lot that I never knew about music and all the composers. And anyway, I could see he'd never done much soldering, so I reorganised the stores and made it look presentable and got commended. I got all the fire buckets and stood them on the clean sand, and with the aid of a bit of whitewash and elbow grease on the handles of the buckets and various other bits and pieces and some fire extinguishers, I set up quite a show, so that when you went in the door you saw this straight in front of you, this firefighting equipment all laid out. And the great thing about the stores was the fact that as it was a mobile battery, all male, it was supposed to be ready to uproot and within 5 minutes get on the road and go to a new site to take up positions. So nearly all the stores was made in such a way that they were quickly assembled, and there was nothing laid out on shelves and all that sort of thing like you would have been in an ordinary stores. It was all in crates and cases, and each one of these had a label on the outside showing what the contents were and all that. I remember it's quite an innovation to me because I'd never been used to that sort of thing before. But see, even right down to cotton and thread, needles and darning wool and all that sort of stuff, all had to be accounted for and put in their various places, and batteries for torches and all sorts of things like that. And anyway, I stopped with this unit for some time, and I remember it was I was stopped there through the winter, and we used to get every now and again you were allowed leave, and you were allowed a weekend leave. Well, because as I was so far away from my own family, it was no good me getting a weekend leave a couple of days just to come up to Somerset. So I used to take advantage of the local leave that they used to have. There was a little town a few miles away where you went by train. It was a sort of a small gauge railway line that ran into this town. And then when you got there, if you applied to the YMCA, they had a centre there, you could get refreshments. And they would then either put you up for the night or send you to a civilian address somewhere in the town where they'd put you up. Anyway, when I got there, I didn't find out all this until after I'd been there some time. At that time, when I applied, there was no beds available. But they told me that if I went up to a certain road and a certain number of a certain road, I'd be able to be accommodated for the night there. Anyway, this was about 9 o'clock at night, and it had been snowing all night, but it stopped snowing the time I got out and started wending my way up to find this address. Quite frightening, really, because I was stranded in the middle of this little town, not knowing more or less where I had to go. Couldn't see the names of the roads. Anyway, eventually I knocked at one or two doors and was met with very hostile reception, because it's not very nice opening the door to a stranger in the middle of a night like that. And of course, people's suspicions were always against that sort of thing. Eventually, I managed to find a place, and it was next door to the house that I was looking for, and the people there kindly showed me where I had to go, and I went there, and the man answered the door, and he said, "Oh, I don't know whether we can put you up." He said, "We're all full up." He said, "Anyway, come in." And I went in, and there was people laying in all sorts of in the passage, in the hall, on the stairs, more or less, and all the rooms. We had single beds, and some people were lying on the floor, and eventually I was lucky, I managed to get a bed, and I stopped there for the night, and then they gave us breakfast next morning, and we had a wash and shave, and went back, and eventually caught the train back to our unit. Quite an experience, really. Anyway, I got leave over the Christmas during this period, and come back and spent 10 days with my family in Yeovil. And I stopped this unit on this coastal gun site right through the... it was a bad winter of 45, and I know it snowed quite a lot, and there was quite a lot of frost and gales blowing at this exposed site. Eventually come to April, and the spring began to make things look brighter, and we were then posted to the whole unit, mobile unit, went to a place in Kent near, got the name of the place now. I know we were on the estuary of the Thames, and we had a gun site there. As I say, I was in the stores, in the quartermaster stores, and I remember it was a lovely spring because we used to sit out on the steps of, by the way, we were in a Shelley camp. This was another holiday camp that had been taken over by the military. Sit on the steps there and sunbathe during the April and May of this time. Anyway, whilst I was there, I one of my duties was, of course, to issue out blankets and sheets and all sorts of stuff like that, and take in laundry and dispense it to the local laundry for cleaning and all that. And I caught attack of scabies, that's a skin disease, which from this contaminated blankets and clothes that I was handling all the time. And I also, whilst I was out sitting on the steps of, as I say, sunbathing, an insect must have bit me on the leg near my ankle, and swelled up next day and quite a lot of pain. And so I went sick, saw the MO, and he sent me to the hospital for treatment. And I had treatment for the scabies, and eventually bite in my leg turned septic, and I was put in hospital for about a fortnight. And the hospital I was in didn't seem to be doing me any good, and the specialist came and he sent me to another unit which dealt in what's called dermatology. And one day, as I know, it never seemed to be getting better. This place came through a sort of hole in my leg. It was filled with pus about as big as half a crown, and quite annoying, really, although I could still walk, but couldn't get my boot on properly. And anyway, the dermatologist came one day, a specialist from London, and he altered the whole treatment. Instead of, like, they used to put hot poultices on this thing and then apply cold lint and all that, but he stopped me doing it. He said, stop all that altogether. And what he'd done was, I always remember this, they cleaned the wound up, and the nurse came round with an enamel bowl with what looked like water in it, and soaked some lint and a bandage in this, and then just wound it round my leg. And I thought it was rather strange, but I found out afterwards this was silver nitrate. And what they were doing is, this was a specialist hospital in dermatology. All the people there were suffering with some sort of skin disease, and they were trying out various methods of treating these people, and this is one of them. Anyway, I was astounded, because after a few days my leg started healing and I felt much better. I remember one day there, the ladies used to come round, the local ladies, and entertain the lads. And one of the shows we saw was a puppet show done by one of the local men there. And I remember it was called The Murder in the Red Barn, I think it was called. And I'd never seen one of these things before, these puppet shows, and it was very, very well turned out. One of the best shows I've ever seen, really. Well-known classical play, I suppose. Anyway, after I left there, I rejoined my unit, and near the coast, as I say, the estuary of the Thames, and we shifted from there, by the way, and went to I forget now where we went. We went to another part of Kent. I don't know, it must have been about May or June. And this was the sort of garden of England, as it were, because there was old orchards of cherry trees. And this was the time of the year when the pickers used to come down from London and various places to pick these cherries. And I remember there was some gypsies or that type of people there, and that they used to do near all the picking. And what used to happen is that most of the buyers used to come from London, and they used to hold auctions in local pubs for various sites, areas of ground that contained so many trees, and they'd auction, or bid rather, for each set of trees. And I found out offers that these people used to tour the site, the buyers, beforehand, find out the site where the largest number of trees was with the fruit ripening, and the lesser distance between each tree, so that this would avail themselves, the pickers, of not walking so many steps or doing so much to gather the harvesting. And I know we were never short of cherries, and I mixed with some of these local, or rather these gypsy type people in the pubs, and they used to have the whole family down there, perhaps a wife, man and wife, and four or five children. They all be used in picking, and they used to have ladders and large baskets, and they'd climb up these ladders and pick these cherries and take them to a point where a man had a scale, and he used to weigh all these cherries out, and he used to be paid so much for each pound or number of pounds that they used to pick. And they'd work right through almost till darkness picking these cherries, and then they'd repair to the local pub and have their beer and sandwiches until it was time to go and start again the next day. But I remember I came home on leave whilst I was there, and I had quite a job, because I was still limping a little bit from my wound in the leg, and but I managed to get. I remember being in the tube train and coming through London at the time of war-torn London, as it was, and all the devastation that was there at the time.